White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
That baby will go!
Lance Lynn with an absolute gem.
Deep to right! It is gone!
It's a no-hitter! Carlos Rodon! What a performance!
Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good morning and welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight, and you can join us in wishing Southpaw a happy 18th birthday. Tomorrow, June 12th, the White Sox take on the Rangers. Come out and celebrate your favorite fuzzy green dude with all of his friends, including Benny the Bull, Tommy Hawk, Staley, and more. For more information, visit whitesox.com/southpaw. My goodness. 18 for Southpaw. That's pretty incredible stuff. Southpaw, one of my favorites. Benny the Bull, always fun to see. I'm kind of hoping, we're going to talk a lot of White Sox baseball. We got a big show planned for you this morning. But if we've got the whole Southpaw birthday thing tomorrow, I think it's worth my telling you that one of my favorite things in the history of mascots is when Benny the Bull pulls the popcorn trick at the United Center. I am hoping that maybe in celebrating Southpaw's birthday tomorrow, Benny the Bull pulls the popcorn trick on Southpaw. It's my own personal birthday wish for Southpaw is what it is. Here's the plan for the show this morning. We have, just a ton for you here today as the White Sox get ready to face the Rangers in game two of this three-game series. It's a 1-10 start and a whale of a pitching matchup, too. Martin Perez has been terrific for Texas. In fact, they signed Corey Seager and they signed Marcus Semien, and they've got a nice little prospect group that's on its way to the bigs, a couple of good catchers, that whole thing. But they are still kind of putting themselves together for what they hope will be, of course, the next, kind of contending Rangers team. That said, Martin Perez, who's going today, 31, 32 years old, he's on a one-year deal. And he might be one of the hottest pitchers that you can get on the trade deadline if you are a contender looking to acquire some starting pitching. So that's kind of how good he's been. Lucas Giolito has been Lucas Giolito. Looking forward to a very good pitching matchup this afternoon here at Guaranteed Rate Field with Lucas Giolito going up against Martin Perez. The White Sox won yesterday. That's always making for a better and more fun White Sox weekly show. It has been a rough go, though. That series against the Dodgers was certainly a tough one. It was right there for the taking to take 2 of 3 against LA. Things got away. The Dodgers did their whole Dodger thing. We'll talk about that, of course. Want to talk about some of the young prospects in this White Sox system. Just a couple of days ago, when the White Sox started their homestand against the Dodgers, Rick Hahn, general manager, sat down and talked about the state of the White Sox. In what he usually does is kind of the first day of a homestand press conference. It's not every homestand, but most homestands. He'll sit down and kind of brief us on what the White Sox are up to, some of the injury updates, all that kind of thing. And he mentioned in that press conference, James Fegan of The Athletic asked him about two White Sox prospects in particular, in Yolbert Sanchez and Lenin Sosa. And I thought, well, goodness, if Rick Hahn's answer about those prospects is, yeah, we think those guys could be around to help us out in 2022, then White Sox fans might want to know a little bit more about those two guys and the rest of the White Sox prospect system. We're coming up on the draft as well, so that should be fun. Jim Callis is going to join us at 11 o'clock this morning. Jim is a writer for MLB Pipeline, an absolutely phenomenal database of prospect knowledge from here all the way. This guy he's one of my absolute favorites to read when it's writing about prospects. Jim's going to join us at 11, so you want to make sure you're around for that. A little bit after 11, maybe in the 11:15, 11:30 range, something like that, after the White Sox have taken BP down on the field, and there's a couple going out there to start hitting right now. But after BP, Jake Berger is going to hop on the phone, and we'll hang out with him for a little while here on the show. Jake has been the center of attention for the White Sox over the last week and a half or so. He's been hitting the long ball. He's been playing third base. He committed an error and talked about that pretty honestly in a loss against the Dodgers. Jake's been a real, is really a real stand-up dude. I really enjoy talking baseball with him. He's going to join us, like I said, after batting practice, after he's done in the cage, maybe 11:15, 11:30. You can follow us on at ESPN White Sox on Twitter. The handle is at ESPN White Sox. And once we've got a better idea of exactly what time Jake is going to be available and on the show, we'll tweet that out and let you know what that timing looks like, so that you know, so that you've got a better chance of tuning in and hearing from Jake Berger. The other thing we're going to do on the show today, or one more piece, I mean, there's a whole lot. We're going to open up to phone calls, of course, 312-332-3776. That's the number. The other thing that we've got planned for you, and I'm really excited about this. Eric Ostrowski is our executive producer of White Sox Baseball. And when we heard this happen during the game just the other day, We have a little app that we use to chat back and forth when Eric is at the studio and when we're here at the ballpark or on the road or whatever. And immediately I saw the three dots coming up from Eric, and I had the three dots coming up. It was while AJ Pierzynski was on the broadcast with Len and DJ, and the baseball conversation that was going on between the three of them was as good as it gets. I mean, just truly as good as it gets. They talked about strategies in the modern day game, the lefty versus righty platoon. DJ squared up and asked AJ about whether he'd ever want to manage. His answer was a good one. They talked a lot about what that fit looks like and how a baseball player, how a guy who, you know, is out of the game for a little while in broadcasting might get into a managing opportunity. This was such a great, you know, 10 minutes or so of baseball conversation between Len and DJ and AJ Pierzynski that we just had to bring it back for you. We really excited about this one. I thought it was a great, great conversation. We'll get to that probably somewhere after 11:30, maybe in the noon hour before we start the pregame show at 12:30 this afternoon. White Sox and Rangers coming up. It's a 1:10 first pitch. Lucas Giolito and Martin Perez are your starters. Couple of details, couple of news and notes items I want to get to here on the show as we get going. Your phone calls, as always, more than welcome. 312-332-3776. That's the number. You want to talk White Sox, we're here for you all the way up until the pregame show starts at 12:30. I know, actually, for a fact, that a lot of White Sox fans are out early tailgating in some of the lots here today, and I, you know, we love it when you've got the show on, maybe blasting out of the car, or if you pulled up from 1992, you've got one of the big boom boxes that you set out in front of the tailgate with the grill going on. You got White Sox Weekly going. Call in. Let's talk White Sox. Love to hear from you. Looks like it could be a real nice day for baseball here at the park. Some cloud cover right now, which hopefully just makes for a better tailgate experience outside the ballpark, or the getting ready for the baseball game experience out there. You know, you get the sunshine, it's a little warm, a little breeze, but you don't have the direct sun, you know, that gets you all over kinds of overheated. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. That's what we got planned for you. I want to start talking about yesterday's ball game. I'll pull up the old scorebook here and kind of go through yesterday's game, because I get and understand, I was doing pre and post game and talking with Len and DJ throughout that Dodger series. That was a frustrating series. And for the most part, the offense for the White Sox has been, you know, the issue that is kind of kept the restrictor plate on this team for the first 60 or so games. Right now, the Sox are 27-29 on the season with the 8-3 win over the Rangers yesterday. There were a couple of moments, and I know that I've used this analogy before here on the show. It's a cross-sport analogy, which I don't usually love, but this one I think is particularly apt, especially for the White Sox in this season. There were moments in that series against the Dodgers. There have been moments, you know, in that series against the Rays where they did take 2 of 3, but lost the first one. Even in the series where they were swept by the Blue Jays in Toronto, what was that, last weekend? Yeah, last weekend. Feels like a little bit longer ago than that for some reason. There have been moments where this White Sox offense, as you know, kind of frustrating as it has been for everybody involved, right? Whether that's Tony La Russa all the way down to everybody hanging out in Lot E, or, you know, Jake Berger, who's coming on the show later, or us here in the broadcast booth. It's just they've had the puck on the stick in a couple of moments, in a lot of key moments. And what I mean by that is, if you're not a hockey fan, hey, you got a fast break going down, you got a 3-on-2, something like that. The odd man rush is what they call it in hockey, as I recall. Puck's right there for you. The pass gets centered, the whole thing, and you've got it right there. All you got to do is pull the trigger. Maybe the puck rolls on you, something like that. But the opportunity, the runners on base, the guy that you want up in the lineup, whether it's Jose Abreu or Berger as he's been swinging it the last 2 weeks, or Luis Robert, who's starting to get hot, AJ Pollock, who's swinging a really sweet bat over the last couple of games. It's the opportunity had been there. In that series against the Blue Jays, in that series against the Dodgers, they cashed in against the Rays, and they cashed in against the Rangers last night. And just that next hit, or maybe even that next walk that moves the line, maybe even a ball in play that challenges a defense and forces a throwing error to start a rally or extend a rally. It just hadn't been there for the White Sox in that last week or so of baseball. And last night, it was. And it was evident in a couple of different ways, and I thought it was kind of cool to watch the disparate skill sets from individual White Sox players kind of shine in ways we didn't expect, right? Luis Robert, talk about the eighth inning now, and the White Sox and Rangers are tied at 3 last night. Corey Seager blasted a home run. He was 1-for-4 last night. Obviously a huge marquee free agent signing for the Rangers. He's got a, you know, $320-something million contract. He's going to be a Texas Ranger for a real long time, it looks like. Now, the White Sox had kept him quiet in the first 3 at-bats. He ground out, flied out, struck out, looking in the sixth inning. That was against Davis Martin in that sixth. And we'll talk about Davis Martin in a little bit. But Corey Seager hits the home run. He ties the thing up. With the leadoff man being Luis Robert, who had already stolen 2 bases and come home on a throwing error by Texas. He stole second, he stole third, and the throw down to third got away. And Luis Robert came home to tie the thing at 2 earlier in that game. You're thinking, okay, this is Luis Robert. He was on with the fielder's choice. He made something happen. This is exactly the kind of guy that you want up to lead off this inning. He singles back up the middle. That passes the baton to Jose Abreu. He grounds out into a double play. I mean, the ball might have hit second base had Corey Seager not been standing there, or rather Marcus Semien not been standing there to field it and throw over. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, there it is. The leadoff guy's on, and the Sox hit into a double play. That's going to happen. Jake Berger legged out an infield single to start a rally with 2 away. Yoan Moncada singled. Yasmani Grandal absolutely blasted one into the right field corner. It rattled around. He had a double. 2 runs scored. Sox up 5-3. Josh Harrison singles up the middle to bring in one more. And then Danny Mendick lights up the fireworks with a 2-run shot out into left field. I do have to talk with Danny about this because a firework or two hit my car. I noticed when I was coming home, there were a couple of fireworks casings on the hood of my car, and the roof of my car is just, it looks like the roof of my car went to a fun run, you know, like a color run, where the kids wear white t-shirts and just get pelted with all the, I don't know what's in the little, it's like dye or something, but it's dry, and then, you know, your little 7-year-old walks out of the color run, and there's all kinds of like green and purple and pink and blue. I need to talk to Danny about it because the home run definitely made my car need a car wash, and that's just, yeah, it's just one more thing I got to get done on the way home today before I pick up a cake on the way home. Still, fun all around the ballpark, and then there were more fireworks, so maybe it wasn't all Danny. It was a good day at the ballpark, and I just, you know, what got me thinking about that rally in particular, or what that rally got me thinking about in particular, was just what it takes to make sure that you're winning on the margins in Major League Baseball, what it takes to make sure that you're making your breaks, the breaks, go your way. And it starts with something as simple as Jake Berger, not an especially fast guy, but certainly tell you that he's faster than he looks, and maybe we'll ask him that when he's our guest a little bit later on, maybe about a half an hour or so here on the show. Jake Berger had to bust it down to first base when he legged out an infield single. He had to run his butt off is what he had to do. And sometimes that's what it takes. It takes, you know, a guy doing something that isn't necessarily his game to exploit an advantage.
We had something similar happen in New York a couple of weeks ago when Yoán Moncada had that enormous shift on. Everybody was on the right side, and he laid down a bunt third baseline. He knocked it. He got himself a double. Sometimes it takes those things when you're not playing the best brand of baseball, your brand of baseball you know you can play. And that has been the case for the White Sox over the first 60 games or so this year. And it's great to see opportunities like that go the White Sox way when you are taking advantage of all those little things, whether that be Luis Robert being a terror on the bases last night, Jake Berger legging it out, Yasmani Grandal hugging the right field line and knocking things in there. He's come around a little bit over the last 4 or 5 days. And in an interview with Daryl Van Skouwen about, again, I want to say it was 2 weeks ago, he said more playing time is going to help him get his legs stronger, kind of put a base under him and get himself back to where he needs to be. He obviously knows it hasn't been the start to 2022 that he wanted it to be, but perhaps, and we'll talk about his numbers over the last 4 or 5 games, and AJ Pollock's too. We're going to get into individual players here, but perhaps this is a sign of Yasmani Grandal starting to turn things on. The shot to right field certainly looked like Yasmani in the second half of 2021 last night. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, is going to join us at 11. We'll talk White Sox prospects with him. You can give us a ring at 312-332-3776. We're talking White Sox all morning long up until the 12:30 pregame show for the White Sox and Rangers. Lucas Giolito and Martin Perez, the starter, should be a good one here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Stay tuned. We got plenty more coming at you on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Pitch. Mendick, high and deep left field. That baby will go. Sorry, Liam. No save chance tonight.
Sit back down. Danny Mendick, Yakutau City on a cutter right there. And the White Sox have that big, huge inning they've been searching for late to take a big lead against the Rangers.
8-3.
Len and DJ with the call here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. That was the Mendick home run last night. It capped a 5-run rally for the White Sox with 2 out in the bottom of the 8th. Sox went on to beat the Rangers 8-3. They are 27-29 with the second game of 3 against the Rangers. Coming up this afternoon here at Guaranteed Rate Field, the White Sox are 5 games behind the Minnesota Twins in the American League Central. Byron Buxton is heating up for the Twins again, but they have some injury issues of their own. We'll get to those in a little bit. The Cleveland Guardians, almost said the old name. That was it. That was almost the first time all year. The Cleveland Guardians are 28-26. They're 3 games back in second place in the American League Central. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You want to talk a little White Sox? We got time for you this morning. And if you are looking for the perfect combination of luxury and flexibility, check out Suite Flex Packs. With multiple packs to choose from, you can completely customize your season in a Diamond Suite. Oh, they're really nice. Y'all want to come out and hang out in one. For more information, call or text 312-674-1000 or visit whitesox.com. All right, some injury notes to update you on for the White Sox. One of them is just kind of breaking now, although we kind of figured it was coming. Vince Velasquez is on the injured list. He and Davis Martin are now the kind of contenders, candidates, your two fighters for the fifth man spot in the rotation for the White Sox, although that will change, I think, in just a little bit. Vince was throwing off the mound against hitters in the cage just about 20 minutes ago or so. He stepped off and is now having his little, you know, kind of post, I don't know if you call it a sim game or a live BP, I think is probably mostly what it looked like. He's chatting now with Ethan Katz and going over things, so that's great to see. Vince getting back to healthy gives the White Sox a lot of depth in that bullpen, a lot of length as well. And it's going to change, I think, you know, the kind of the complexion that bullpen in a little bit, because Lance Lynn, it sounds like, is all set and ready to roll for Tuesday's start against the Detroit Tigers. That is an evening game. It's a 6:10 start out in or local time and 7:10 out in Detroit. That is a Tuesday start. The Tigers have yet to name a starter. They've actually got some trouble in finding starters right now. Their entire rotation, I mean, four of their top five guys are hurt right now. Casey Mize, we just found out, is going to head to go get Tommy John surgery, so that puts him out until probably the middle of next season. That's a tough one. Depth-wise, it has just not been the season a lot of Tigers fans and obviously that organization wanted. So they have not yet named a starter for Tuesday's game. Technically speaking, the White Sox haven't either, although it does sound like there's a lot of... Tony La Russa said yesterday that, you know, the hope is they'll get right back into the swing of things with Lance Lynn on Tuesday. So that's big news. It truly is. Tony was very excited with in his interview with Len Casper yesterday's pregame show, kind of saying that, you know, after today, which was yesterday, after yesterday, the White Sox will have their whole rotation intact for the first time in 2022. Now, that's great news. Obviously, the pitching has not been the issue for the White Sox, whether that be starters or relievers. I mean, they have pitched about as well as you could ask in a lot of different circumstances. But getting Lance Lynn back and being that guy who can, you know, probably not at first take it deep into games, I would expect that you still have to be, if not cautious, then certainly careful about how much you're going to push Lance and, you know, exactly how many innings you're getting out of him, what kind of stress you're getting in some of those innings. You still have to be careful with that sort of thing. Because, again, with Lance, like Michael Kopech, and, you know, it just... You want those innings to be free and easy, or at least, you know, accessible to guys come playoff time. And the White Sox haven't changed their target. They've not changed their sights. The goalposts haven't moved, even down or under two games under and five games back in the Central. This is still a team that believes in its stated goal when spring training started after the lockout. They want to go to the World Series. You know, this is a team that wants playoff success and has the talent to do it. There have been a bunch of different issues, whether they be injury or underperformance or just kind of some, you know, some unfortunate years from guys to start the season that have held them back a little bit. But the promise, I think, very clearly remains for the White Sox. And that's part of what, it's the good and bad of baseball right now. That's part of what makes this team a frustrating one over the first 60 games or so. It's that it is so clearly better than it is played. And yet, it has played the way it has. So we shall see if that changes over the next little bit. Also, yeah, it's worth noting, and I know a lot of folks have written about this, a lot of folks have talked about this, whether it be on other talk shows here on the flagship, ESPN 1000, all that kind of stuff. The White Sox schedule changed yesterday. The structure of it got altered yesterday. Not, you know, like changed around and who they're playing and what they're playing, but the first 60 games or so for the White Sox were tough. They were playing a lot of really good teams. Now, say what you will about, you know, last year's record against teams over 500 and all that kind of stuff, and it is worth talking about. However, you know, the White Sox face one of the easiest schedules if you just go by winning percentage of their opponents from here until the end of the season. It sets up a lot nicer for the White Sox in the next 100 games or so than it did in the first 60 or so. And that is a good thing. You got to take advantage of those. The White Sox didn't sit down and make this schedule. The schedule makers did, or I guess the schedule algorithms did. And you got to take advantage of those. So the games are there for the Sox, and hopefully, you know, against a Rangers team like this. Yes, it is a tough starter today in Martin Perez, but there is an underbelly of that bullpen, and there is a White Sox offense that is really starting to blink and click into life. So that should be a fun thing to watch. The other day, Rick Hahn, White Sox general manager, said that two prospects in Yolbert Sanchez and Lenin Sosa are guys that may well be available to help the White Sox cause in 2022. That got us thinking, why don't we give a call to Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline and talk a little bit about the White Sox farm system and why those two that Rick mentioned might be guys that have a little helium attached to them as prospects. We'll talk White Sox prospects next on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
We're on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. You can join us for family Sundays at Guaranteed Rate Field with tickets starting at $10 and parking for only $15. Bring your family out to the ballpark for a day full of fun. Family Sundays are proudly presented by Coca-Cola. Visit whitesox.com/Sundays to purchase your tickets today. White Sox and Rangers coming up. 1:10 start, 12:30 pregame show. That means we had a lot of time to hang out with you, a White Sox fan, here on White Sox Weekly. We're going to hang out with Jim Callis in just a moment. He writes prospects for MLB. We're going to talk with him in like 10 seconds, so stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We pause it real quick. Station ID.
From the First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank's State Street Studio, this is WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
So this is White Sox Weekly, and we're going to have Jim Callis on in just a little bit. Our phones are being a little goofy. Apparently they're acting like they're from 1985, but we'll get. And really, you know, I'm taking a shot at 1985, but it was a good year for a lot of people in a lot of different ways, and the movies were fun too. And that's the other thing. Here's a little inside the White Sox. I was talking to a couple of different players, younger guys, you know, guys who are, you know, maybe in their second or third year in Major League Baseball. And while I was on the road trip in Tampa, I was talking to a couple of guys. Oh, what have you been up to? You know, what'd you do the off day? All that kind of stuff. There are a number of dudes on this team who have just recently seen Top Gun Maverick. And I mean, full disclosure, I haven't seen the movie yet, so please don't call with spoilers. I know Goose dies in the first one. I've seen the first Top Gun maybe 1,000 times. It's just one of those movies for me growing up. I saw it 1,000 times. And to a man, every White Sox player I spoke with who had seen the movie were talking about this film like it was Shawshank, like it was Casablanca, like it was, you know, just the finest installment of American film that has been put down in years. And it got me very excited. It got me very, very excited to go see the movie. I was glad that a bunch of young big leaguers got out there to see a little 80s nostalgia, how we've gotten on this particular tangent. I'm not 100% sure, but I did want to tell you that a couple of White Sox players have all gone to see, or have gone to see, I don't know if they went to see together, Top Gun Maverick, and they really, really enjoyed it. That's actually not a pitch for the movie, but I guess it could be. 312-332-3776 as we get the guest phone line sorted out. You want to chat a little White Sox, we're here to do it with you. Jim Callis is going to join us in just a little bit. Looking forward to that conversation. I suppose I could preview it here with you before we have Jim on the line. I want to talk prospects with him because, obviously, Rick Hahn mentioned Yolbert Sanchez and Lenin Sosa as potential contributors to the 2022 White Sox. And I guess we can do that now with Jim, who's now on the line. Jim, appreciate you hanging through some of the phone issues. Thanks so much.
No
truly,
problem.
Truly love the work and can't wait to talk White Sox prospects with you here. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Wonderful. I wanted to start with Davis Martin, believe it or not. We'll talk about the guys with helium and infield action and all that kind of stuff in a bit. But I'm interested in how your job works when you see a guy like Davis, you know, kind of in the middle of a system that is toward the bottom of the league, break in the way he has, get sent back down, and then make a couple of good quality starts with the stuff he does. How does Davis's performance in the big leagues over the last little bit kind of affect how you either re-rank or re-evaluate a prospect in real time?
Yeah, well, it's funny in his case because so we update our lists. I mean, it's weird how we update our list. It looks like they're constantly updated. In one way, they are. When a guy graduates to the big leagues, like loses his rookie status, then we take him off our prospect list. So, like earlier this year, when Jake Berger, I think it was Jake Berger, got, I think it went over 131 at-bats, or it was 46 days of service time, he comes off our list and we replace him. And I put Davis Martin on the list, and ironically, I think it was right before he even pitched in the big leagues. But once you're on the list, you don't really move until we do our midseason update. But with Davis, what's interesting about him is, you know, we usually when we add a guy, we add him, you know, at the very bottom of the list, or maybe we'll put him at like 27 if the guy's at the bottom of the list are hurt or struggling or whatever. And we put Davis, you know, I do our White Sox list. I put him at 15th on our White Sox list just because his profile has increased so much this year. I remember him from the College World Series. He was a big part of a Texas Tech team. And then he had shoulder tendonitis as a sophomore and kind of faded as a junior. And that's why he went in the 14th round. And, I mean, you know, you follow the White Sox system. I follow the White Sox system. He really didn't do much in his first two full pro seasons. You know, 19 and then come back from pandemic. It's just okay. You know, he missed some bats, but he got hit around. And then this year, it just seems like, I don't know that the stuff is that much, like it's taken a huge leap. I don't think it's so much that. You know, the fastball plays really well. You know, the slider plays well off the fastball. He's willing to throw his changeup. But, you know, he's always throwing a strike. I just think he's commanding his stuff better. But he's been impressive. And so then to answer your question, so we don't really adjust the list until August at this point. But, I mean, if we were re-ranking the list, you know, I think Davis Martin would be, you know, somewhere probably in the back half of the top 10 right now.
How do you, what box do you guys check to measure that a prospect has learned how to get guys out with the stuff he has? Because that's kind of what I've seen from Davis in the couple of starts that he's made up here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a case where you can look at, you know, the statistics tell you that story. You know, because like I said, he's had good stuff. Mm. He just in the past, you know, in 2019, he had a 5.04 ERA in low A, and then he came back after the pandemic, and he had a 4.91 ERA between high A and double A. He pitched a little bit better at double A toward the end of the year. But you could just see, I mean, he's not giving up as many hits. You know, the strikeout-to-walk ratio is better. I mean, you can get reports on the stuff, but I think the statistics in this case, you know, in terms of being able to get guys out, the statistics will tell you that story.
Talking with Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, MLB.com, one of our favorites here on White Sox Weekly. Jim, Rick Hahn the other day did the thing that I think gets all fans and prospects writers interested. He said names of prospects and a calendar year. And for Yolbert Sanchez and Lenin Sosa, that calendar year was 2022, and he said their names. What are the thumbnail reports on Yolbert and on Lenin? Why is it that a general manager like Rick Hahn actually attached the calendar year of 2022 to those two players?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a result of the way they're playing, and obviously they haven't been getting a lot of production out of second base. It's one of the biggest holes on the team. I know Moncada's been hurt too, but you know, with Sanchez, you know, it's interesting because when they signed him, my reports I was getting from international scouts were that this was kind of a glove first guy, and you weren't sure how much of a bat there really was, and you know, like a lot of Cubans, you know, for tax reasons, he went to the Dominican Summer League after he signed, and he was 22 years old, so the Dominican Summer League was not really any kind of test. And then the pandemic came. So, you know, we really didn't know much about Yolbert Sanchez, honestly, in terms of on-field performance until he came back last year. And he came out, and he hit 300, including 340-something in Double-A. And he's come out this year, and he was raking again to start the season in Double-A, and he's continued to hit in Triple-A. And, you know, I mean, he's shown that he's got, you know, very good bat-to-ball skills, some of the best bat-to-ball skills in the organization. I think he's more of a steady than a plus defender at short, you know, probably solid at second base. You know, not a big power guy, but, you know, he's got some strength and bat speed. And, so he's a guy who, at least the initial reports I got of him, and turned out to be totally different from the player he's turned out to be. And then with Lenin Sosa, he's a guy they've always liked. I mean, they signed him, you know, when he was 16 years old out of Venezuela in 2016. And when you sign guys that young, they take a while to progress. And you know, he made his full season debut in 2019. You know, he was a teenager. He was still really young. And, you know, the reports have always been, you know, it's really good hand-eye coordination. He's got basketball ability, too. I think he's got more pop than Sanchez. And really with him, the key was, you know, and I think in his defense he was young for his levels a lot, was just making better swing decisions. I mean, he, you know, can put the bat on the ball, but he, you know, struck out about four or five times as much as he walked. And that's obviously going to be more of a problem when you climb the ladder and you face more advanced pitchers. But you look at this year, I mean, he's got 14 walks in 53 games, and he walked 16 times all last season. I mean, he's not, you know, it's not a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio, but it's much more manageable. You know, he's hitting 342. You know, he's got 12 home runs and about a third of a major league season. So I think with him, I think we've always known that talent was in there. It was just whether he was going to be able to make those better swing decisions. And to be fair, you know, even though he feels like he's been around forever, he's still just 22 years old and he's in Double A, so he's still very young for the league. And I think he's just kind of catching his breath. And you know, I think this is a guy who could hit 275. you know, 15, you know, maybe even 20 homers a season, you know, once he hits his stride in the big league. So, you know, I think the reason Rick brought both these guys up is they're both playing exceptionally well, you know, in the upper levels of the minors right now.
Jim, are there prospects, and I think Lenin and Yolbert both kind of, I don't know, click the radar for this, but aren't necessarily guys that are vulnerable to this. Are there guys who you see flags on that could be more hurt or vulnerable to being rushed than others? What are some shared characteristics of guys who might have been thrown into or thrust into too much too soon? How do you protect against that as an organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be careful. I mean, I think the biggest thing is looking at youth and experience. And, you know, the tough thing is with the pandemic, everybody lost a year. I mean, even if you went to the alternate site, that's not the equivalent of playing a full minor league season. Yeah, you might have gotten some at-bats against pro pitchers, but you're essentially seeing the same pro pitchers day after day. You're not seeing a whole variety of guys, and you're not really, I mean, I guess they were keeping stats, but it's not the same. It's not game intensity. I mean, a lot of these places, you had coaches playing the outfield because they didn't have enough bodies, so it's not the same. And, you know, teams had to be, you know, it was kind of a conundrum. You know, what do? Do you put a guy where he would have picked up in 2020 had 2020 existed? Or do you say, hey, the guy would have been in high A in 2020, and we'll move him to double A in 2021? And I think teams take different paths with guys. But yeah, I've always thought, I mean, I'm getting old now, Connor. I'm in my 50s. I've covered this stuff for 30 years. I think it's a lot easier to destroy guys' confidence than it is to build them back up. So I think you generally see teams err on the side of caution. I mean, like, you can even, I'll give you an example just with the White Sox this year. I mean, Oscar Colas, and now granted, you know, his background is different than most 23-year-olds because he was in Japan and in the minors over there and didn't play a lot in the majors. But, you know, again, he is 23 years old. They gave him big money. You know, you could easily said, okay, he's 23. Well, let's throw him in double A. And instead, you know, they've let him start off in high A and get off to a good start. And, you know, you could promote him to double A in the second half. But I do think you kind of have to look at guys individually. But if you're looking for something in general, I would just look at age and level of experience. You know, I mean, you probably hear it from fans, too, who are like, oh, why hasn't this prospect been promoted? You know, he's tearing it up for 6 weeks in low A to start the season. And, you know, I think you want to give the guys a foundation. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, if you're looking from a statistical standpoint, yeah, I look at strikeout-to-walk ratio because I think that shows how well a hitter or a pitcher commands the strike zone. And if a guy's not commanding the strike zone and you promote him, you know, sometimes that doesn't go well. I mean, I'll throw out an old reference from 20 years ago. But when Corey Patterson was coming up through the Cubs system, you know, and he was, you know, early pick in the draft and, you know, near the top of everybody's top 100 list, and, you know, looked like he had the tools. And he did have the tools to potentially be a superstar. And the Cubs at that time kept promoting him. You know, I've done Cubs prospect stuff for years, and it would always be like, hey, he really needs to work on the strike zone, he needs to work on this and that. But they never made him work on that stuff, and they'd promote him, and he got to the big leagues, and he never really realized his potential.
I always say, Jim, you know, if people ask about prospects, and I'm no prospect hound or anything, but never scout the stat line. But if you're going to look at one, maybe look at strikeout to walk ratio. I think that axiom, too, that you mentioned about confidence in players, You read my mind. I was going straight to Oscar Colas. I guess, you know, since you have talked about him a little bit here, has he checked the boxes? Yeah, passed the smell test, the sniff test, or whichever test that you like to use your senses with in prospects?
Yeah, I think he has. I mean, it's not like he's hitting 350, but, you know, again, you have to realize his background was different. You know, he spent 3 years in Japanese minor leagues. I think he played 7 games in Japanese big leagues. So it's not like he was a Japanese big leaguer. And then, you know, he didn't play in 2021 when he was waiting to sign with the White Sox. And you also have to factor that in, too, with the Cubans. I mean, the difference for him with some of the Cubans is he had been paid some money. He had played abroad before. So it wasn't as big of a culture shock leaving Cuba coming to the U.S. because he'd been to Japan. But, you know, just adjusting to baseball. Most of these guys do have a layoff, and adjusting back to playing the game against good competition can be tough. So I think they're doing kind of what I expect. I mean, kind of what they did with Cespedes last year, although Cespedes was a little different because there were some visa issues they had to resolve first, and then I think, what was it, a shoulder injury? Like, so he was DHing some. But they eventually promoted him to double A, you know, later in the season. And my guess would be that some maybe at midseason or a little later, we'll see Colas in Double A. But like again, if you throw Oscar Colas in Double A and he hits 220, and let's say he's striking out more than you like, you know, then it's tough because you also get stuck. Like, you know, if you send him down, you know, that can be a blow to the guy's confidence. But if you let him keep getting eaten up in Double A, you know, if that was what you were doing, that can be a blow to his confidence. And I'll give you another example. I don't know why old Chicago team outfielders are popping my head, but Courtney Hawkins, your first-round pick in 2012. And in his pro debut, he wound up going up to high A, even though he's coming out of high school at the end of the season, was part of a playoff run, and he had played well at three levels. And they sent Courtney Hawkins to high A at age 19 for his first full season. And he had 178, and he had about a 40% strikeout rate. And they sent him back to high A, so that was a blow in 2014. He really didn't perform much better, and he really never got back on track. So I just it's very difficult, and I think you're better off slow-playing guys at the beginning and then letting their performance dictate how fast they move.
I was talking with Chris Getz a couple of months ago, and I asked him whether or not the term helium was still the most popular term with prospects on the rise. And he said he couldn't come up with a different one. I wonder if you've heard anything different. And if you have, does that term attach to anyone other than Brian Ramos more in the White Sox system? I know a lot of White Sox fans have asked about Ramos. He's at high A, third base, second base. Is that the guy that you would say, yeah, that could be that dude? He's got the most helium in that system.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, you know, especially if you look at his level of fame, you know, coming into the year. And yeah, helium is still the term everybody uses.
We're still using that? Okay,
we're
all right.
Still using that. I will say, like, when I write a mock draft, like, like this will sound funny, like the hardest part of the mock draft sometimes isn't so much, like, figuring out how to organize information. It's how to, like, write this team's on this guy or this guy's got helium, you know, different ways, so you're not using helium, like, eight times in a mock draft.
Exactly.
So I'll slip in and draft parlance, like, the guy's rising up draft boards or helping his cause, but helium is still the go-to term. And yeah, Ramos is a really good call. And you know, it's interesting because before the pandemic, he had a pretty solid debut as a 17-year-old in the Arizona League. And, you know, a lot of time he was, I think, the third youngest regular player in the Arizona League, the whole league, not just the White Sox. And, you know, generally when you sign a guy, you know, at 17, you'll send him to the Dominican Summer League. So he was kind of advanced. And then, okay, he lost, you know, a year to the pandemic, didn't get to play in games. And then last year he had shoulder issues, too, last year. And so he had to DH a lot at the beginning of last year. And, you know, had a pretty respectable year. I mean, he hit .244, but he had a .760 ops. He had, you know, 42 extra base hits. He controlled the strike zone reasonably well in low A at age, I guess that would have been 19, you know, which is impressive. And, you know, again, because I, you know, it wasn't loud numbers, I think he kind of flew under the radar. And, you know, and the White Sox signed Oscar Colas, and Jose Rodriguez had a big year. And, you know, they drafted Colson Montgomery, and he kind of got bypassed, you know, just in terms of name recognition, I think, in the system. But he was a guy, if you talk to the White Sox, they always would bring up, hey, this guy's one of our better young hitters, you know, in the entire system. And I think he's showing that this year. I mean, he's still, you know, super young. I mean, he turned 20. He's not only 20, he turned 20 in March. So, I mean, it's a young 20. And he's hitting .280 in high A. He's already got 9 home runs, which is almost as many as he had last year. And, yeah, I mean, he's a guy. It's interesting just looking at our White Sox list. If we were re-ranking them again today, I think you can make a case for Brian Ramos maybe being in the top five.
Well, that's a tease, Jim. When does the mid-season re-ranking and all of your work start over again for prospects?
Well, it's different now with the draft. Before the draft moved to July, we would update this stuff in mid-July before the trade deadline. But now the draft is literally in mid-July, and then the signing deadline for the draft, I think, I can't remember if it's exactly August 1st, right around there. So basically it'll be a week or two after the signing deadline for the draft, which is unfortunate because I mean, I know everybody at MLB.com who does this stuff, we liked updating them so you had updated lists before the trade deadline, so you had everybody's rankings.
Right.
But it's just, it's impossible because, I mean, the draft won't even end till July 19th. And, I mean, like, A, we don't have the manpower to do both the draft and be updating our list. But even if we, you know, wanted to say, like, whoever the White Sox take in the first round, we'll provisionally put him in the list. And then if he doesn't sign, like a Kumar Rocker situation, we'll pull him off, which would be goofy. We just don't have, because the draft is so late, we don't have the time to, like, really dive in and work on all the lists until the draft's over. So, unfortunately, it won't be until probably early August.
Well, we will obsess about it either way. And, Jim, if I promise you that I can come up with three synonyms for this guy has helium, will you set aside some time for White Sox Weekly after you've re-ranked the lists?
Definitely. If you come up with a good synonym, I will even work it into a mock draft. Depending on when you give me these synonyms, I will guarantee to slide at least one of them into my next mock draft.
I'll hit up the DMs, Jim. I appreciate it.
There you go. Perfect. Right. It was fun talking to you.
Always a pleasure. Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, one of the best to do it. Love talking prospects with Jim. I would imagine that if you tuned in halfway through that interview, or if you caught parts of it, or maybe you had to leave after it, go handle the kids and then bring them back in from the house or something like that, or into the house, I guess. That interview will be available to you on the ESPN Chicago app. All of our White Sox weeklies are downloadable in podcast form, and that's one you're going to want to keep handy with you, because if you're like, you know, you're out having a drink with some friends and talking White Sox prospects, you're like, oh, well, I think Brian Ramos is pretty good, and your buddy's like, oh, I don't know about Brian Ramos. You pop up on the podcast, you know, here's what Connor and Jim Callis were talking about with Brian Ramos. That'll win you points. That'll win you points in your White Sox friend groups, because that's what you want, is points there. We're going to talk with Jake Berger in a little bit. He just got done hitting in the cage. The Rangers are taking infield and hanging out, getting ready for the game today. Martin Perez and Lucas Giolito, the two starters in this one, game two of this three-game series. After a quick break, Jake Berger of your Chicago White Sox. It's White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. Welcome back. It's White Sox Weekly. You can join us for Family Sundays at Guaranteed Rate Field. Bring your family out there for tickets starting at just $10, parking for only $15. It's a day full of fun. Family Sundays are proudly presented by Coca-Cola. Visit whitesox.com/Sundays to purchase your tickets today. One of my favorite things about Family Sundays are watching the kids run around the bases. It's always a blast. I know one guy who I think I saw watching kids run the bases for just a brief moment down in Tampa when the Rays had the kids running around, is Jake Berger. He's on the phone with us now. Jake, I think I saw you in the dugout for a brief moment watching the kids run around, and I know for a fact Liam Hendricks was actually running around the bases with children while we were in Tampa. It was a lot of fun to watch. How are you, my man?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I was watching. You know, it's a kids game, so you got to remind yourself sometimes of that.
It's the best. I get worried because they get so excited rounding third and heading home, and there are so many near collisions near the plate. I'm just so, like, whether it's the White Sox or the Rays, they're always like all the attendants around home plates to make sure that when a child takes a header, that they're going to be okay. They're going to get up and realize they enjoyed themselves, and they're just fine because they're kids and they're pliable and they'll be okay.
Exactly. You see so many collisions around there.
It's dangerous, but it's a lot of fun. Okay, so we're going to do something kind of goofy on the interview today. I'm going to prep you for a question that I'm going to ask toward the end, because I kind of want you working it over and thinking about it some, and then we'll, you know, talk baseball and the rest of the boring stuff. Toward the end of the interview, Jake, I am going to ask you, what is the one thing you have never tried but are unreasonably confident you'd be good at? One thing you've never tried but are unreasonably confident that you'd be good at. So Bake that in the noodle, and we'll talk about it coming up a little bit later. How does one start a two-out, five-run rally against the Rangers in the eighth inning last night? Take me through busting it down to first and getting things started for your squad last night.
Well, first you have to hit it in the right spot. You know, it's 60 miles an hour off the bat. So, you know, you see it come off, and you kind of have an awareness of where, you know, maybe this is a tough play. Like, I got to dig a little extra, but you know me, I'm going to go 100% all the time. But yeah, I mean, I take pride in that, in my effort down the line, and you know, it makes a tough play. It rattles the defense, and Miguel Cairo always talks about that. You know, put pressure on the defense no matter what, because you never know what's going to happen. And fortunate enough, you know, I was safe, and then we started that two-out rally.
Who told you it was 60 off the bat?
The iPad. I think it was like 66 miles an hour off the bat. You know, it's not what I'm accustomed to, but you know, they all count the same, right?
I will only tell you this because you've been hitting 440 foot taters over the last 2 weeks. Baseball Savant has it at 40.
I mean, even better. Even better.
How's the last week and a half been or so? Yeah, I obviously the series against the Dodgers didn't go the way you guys wanted. You won the last two against Tampa, and it felt like, you know, there it is. There's that squad again. The Dodgers are a very good ball club, and they'll put it on anybody. But I know that, you know, this has kind of been a season of you take some lumps, you bounce right back. You guys have been around that 500 mark and never out of the division all season long. How did the up and downs weigh on this team as a whole?
You know, I think we talked about it last night. I was talking to Josh Harrison and AJ Pollock, and it's like, hey man, like we feel really confident right now. You know, I think we're starting to click on all cylinders, and you know, I mean, you look at the game, the last game against the Dodgers, you know, kept battling back. And, you know, I mean, realistically, you know, if we don't have, you know, either my air in that game or stuff like that, you know, I mean, we could have won that series and if not swept that series. So that tells us we're right where we need to be against one of the best clubs in all of baseball. You know, we go to Tampa, take two down there, you know, so I think we're trending in the right direction, and we're confident in ourselves. And I was talking to Tony. It's all about guts, you know. You know, sometimes your offense is going to struggle, sometimes your pitching is going to struggle, sometimes your defense is going to struggle. But as long as you have the guts and you don't just roll over and you know, let the other team just take it, you know, I think that's a good formula, winning formula for the end of the season.
You're a guy who is – talk with Jake Berger here on White Sox Weekly. You're a guy who is no stranger to bouncing back from things that didn't go your way. Obviously, the injury history that White Sox fans are very familiar with, that you've talked about a lot, whether it's on your own pod or here on the show a couple of times. Does your work – I know you've DH'd over the last couple of days, so maybe that changes your pregame routine a little bit when you've got a different position. But when you do have a tough one like that, an error – do you change? Do you go attack that play when you take infield the next day? Do you change it or alter at all what you're trying to get better on for the next day? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I watch a ton of video, and you know, you can kind of see clearly on video what you do wrong, if it's your pre-pitch or your first step or a misread, whatever it may be. And so you have to analyze that, and then the next time that play is hit to you, you have a better understanding of what you need to do and where you need to put your body. So that's kind of how I work on it. And like, if I'm having trouble with, you know, like high choppers with like a short pick, I'll work on that. That play the other day is kind of tough to simulate because it was hit hard and it hit low and then it kind of kicked up on me. So it's hard to simulate that, but you know, I really just try and like get my hands working again. Like after that, you know, I'll do a whole hands routine with Joe and, you know, just try and do that as much as I can. Especially, you know, when you're playing third base every 3-4 days, you know, it's the hot corner for a reason, and you have to keep your hands ready no matter what.
What are your conversations with Yoan Moncada like when you guys are either taking ground balls out there or sitting in the dugout? You know, in what way and what do you guys like to talk about, whether it's, you know, defensively at third base, I guess is where you guys share the most in common, but you're also both of you facing 95. I'm sure you wish you were facing 95. 99, 101 mile an hour fastballs on a daily basis.
Yeah. No, he's been super helpful over at third base. You know, he's one of the best defenders in the game, in my opinion. And so just learning from him every day, both just watching him do his work, but also him, you know, kind of making sure I'm being smooth and not too choppy. I think that's where I get in trouble is sometimes I look like a robot when I'm out there, instead of, you know, being smooth and letting my hands work and trusting my hands. He's been a big help in that way.
One of the things that we've been talking about with everybody on White Sox Weeklies are about what might be happening next season in Major League Baseball. And I find it really interesting to talk with guys like you and with Davis and with Gavin, among others, who have recently played minor league ball, because some of these rules changes are there already and you've had, you know, real world experience with it. Where does Jake Berger stand on the potential of banning the shift in Major League Baseball?
I could honestly care less.
Really?
I'm not you know, I think left-handed bats, you know, like Gavin, probably have a better understanding of that. But you don't see the shortstop playing in shallow left field for us. You know, yeah. I think it affects lefties a little more because you're taking away line drive hits. But yeah, I don't really have an opinion. I think I like the ABS, the automated balls and strikes, and I like the pace of play thing they did down there, because you hardly play a game over 3 hours. It's like speed ball, it feels like. Yeah. I like both of those implementations, but the shift, I could care less either way.
Interesting. I'm glad you brought up the ABS and the timekeeping thing too. I think that, you know, this is my perspective, obviously. Less time on the field for you guys keeps you healthier, right? I mean, I think that's first and foremost when you're kind of talking about shorter games. I would imagine where you're headed.
Yeah.
I would also guess that, like, you know, if you're going to face a short reliever, right, and you're that first guy up to lead off the inning against, like, I don't know, Chapman or something like that, if he only has 13 seconds in between pitches, it's got to be harder for him to get up to 99 in each next pitch, which means even if you're, you know, you're 1-2 and then he's got to come with you, or 2-1 and he's got to come to you with that fastball, maybe it's 96 and it's not 98, and that's that much easier to get to. I see that as a huge potential change in this game. Am I on point?
Yeah, you are. I think first and foremost, the injury thing's huge. You know, if you're not standing on your feet for 4 hours, and it's 3 hours, you know, I mean, what's that through 162? You know, and so that side of it. And then also, I mean, they do a good job where you can have two disengagements from the rubber. So, like, say it is a 1-2 and he feels a little rushed.
Yeah.
He can step off and it resets the clock. So, you know, you don't really put a pitcher at injury risk in that way. And I was a fan of it. It was fast paced for sure. When I first got used to it. But once I got used to it, it was pretty nice.
See, you know, here's the other thing I'm thinking. You guys, this generation of players catches so much stuff. I have to say stuff. I almost got carried away, Jake. You guys catch so much about, you're only playing 140 games, or, you know, he's not playing 162 like Hank Aaron did or like Willie Mays did. They didn't play four-hour games every single day. I that is a big change. How many more games could you play if you were playing, you know, 245 on a call it 5 days a week?
Yeah, no, then there were some games down there too that were like 2 hours and 15 minutes. And you're like, oh, did I play a baseball game?
Did it work?
Yeah.
You get paid for this?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's good both for the fans and for the players. You know, obviously there's some like diehard baseball fans that are like, no, I want the traditional 3.5-4 hour games. But overall, you know, I mean, especially the younger generations now, everything's instant gratification. And I think if you make the games a little quicker, I think baseball, you know, will kind of draw in that younger crowd again.
Yeah. Well, there's diehard football fans who want to see the quarterback allowed to get killed, and they're still watching football every Sunday too.
Yep.
So. All right. Last one. Here it is. This is the question we led you off with. What is, Jake Berger, one thing you have never tried but are unreasonably confident that you'd be good at?
I think I could go to a chess tournament and win that tournament.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on. Okay, so clearly you've played chess before, but you never played in a chess tournament.
Yeah, so that's where the difference is, right?
No, that makes
you said
sense.
Something you've never done before, which is in a tournament.
First of all, love you finding the loophole in the question. That's beautiful. that's classic ball player stuff. What would make you – what makes you – so confident you could win in a tournament?
You know, I think I'd probably I got a couple moves up my sleeve that I've been practicing for a while. You know, some defense set up.
Okay,
and so,
all right.
You know, I think if I gave it a go, I think I'd have a chance. You know, I'm not going to go up against the best of the best and win. I'd probably get checkmate in like three moves, but you know, I think. The tournament, I'm confident in my abilities.
All right. All right. When I see you tomorrow in the clubhouse, I will have found you a local chess tournament you can enter on an off day.
All right. Perfect.
Jake, appreciate you, my man. Have a good one today.
Thank you so much.
Jake Berger of your Chicago White Sox. That is the last thing I expected Jake to say. That's just the last thing. That's awesome. He thinks he could win a chess tournament. I am going to find – we have an entire team of producers, of engineers, of research staff here at the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network, and we are now, currently, our number one priority is finding a local chess tournament during a White Sox off day that he can get into. That is the number one priority now, and we are bringing him – are you marking my words? Mark my words! I am bringing him an entry slip for this chess tournament the next time I see him as soon as we find it. That's happening. That is Sox fans, join us for Southside Mondays, presented by United Airlines on Monday, June 20th. Every Monday home game, watch the Sox rep the Southside jerseys and honor small businesses making an impact on the Southside. Each Southside Monday ticket includes up to $20 in concession credit added to your mobile ticket. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/Mondays. We're having one heck of a White Sox weekly this morning. An absolute ton of fun. We talked to Jim Callis about White Sox prospects. We just got off the phone with Jake Berger. I've got more up my sleeve. Len Casper and Darren Jackson and AJ Pierzynski had an absolute whale of a baseball conversation during a game the other day. During a broadcast, AJ was cool enough to stop by and hang out for like 8 outs, 9 outs or something like that. We're going to play that for you in a little bit. I want to dig into a couple of things on the field that we've seen from the White Sox and a bit into this pitching matchup today. I think it's a really good one. Martin Perez and Lucas Giolito. Of course, if you want to talk White Sox, 312-332-3776. That's the number. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Recap the game. Cap and J-Hood. Mornings on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. We are live at Guaranteed Rate Field. It has been, I think it's been a really fun first hour of the show. It's kind of flown by. We were talking White Sox to start things off, just kind of revisiting last night's game, a little bit about that series against the Dodgers. We talked with Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline and chatted up about White Sox prospects. You know, we've seen a couple of things on Twitter, and I apologize. We didn't bring up Colson Montgomery, the number one overall pick for the White Sox just last year. With Jim, he's so knowledgeable about every single minor leaguer in every single system. And I thought, you know, asking him about the number one guy, Colson, who is playing well, mind you, I just assumed White Sox fans, we're good with Colson. He's got a lot of time to get here, everything like that. I thought it was more interesting to get into some of the others. We will, I promise you, we'll talk with Jim Callis. August, I think he said early August is when the MLB Pipeline re-ranks the minor league rankings, the prospect rankings in each system. So once that re-rank has happened, we'll have Jim back on and we'll revisit some of the prospects that get added via the draft, if possible. And we'll talk about some of the prospects that get added to other systems and moved around as the trade deadline pops up, too. Jim mentioned, too, that the prospect re-ranks, they've kind of targeted at MLB to hit before that deadline, the trade deadline, so that when fans go on and check your prospect ranks and stuff like that, you've got an updated list of who your team has traded away and who they're picking up and all this kind of stuff. It's a brilliant strategy, obviously, but the timing of that draft and re-ranking the prospects and the trade deadline doesn't necessarily line up for it. So we're going to plan, you know, for those of you who are like, oh, talk more prospects. I get it. I mean, it's one of the more fun things about baseball. We will plan for that conversation a little bit after the deadline, maybe a week or two after the deadline, something like that. So if you're thinking about it, if you're onto it, and I appreciate everybody hopping on Twitter and saying you appreciated the conversation. Of course you did. It's Jim Callis. He's absolutely fantastic. We talked with Jake Berger for a little while. He was great. Tons of fun. We've got to hit a break because of how long the conversation went with Jake Berger and how much fun we were having there. While I'm in the break, I will be looking up open chess tournaments for Jake Berger to enter. Might be that one is a lot closer than we think. Might be that one's a little bit more convenient for Jake to make. It could be that the powers that be our inventing chess tournaments to hold, I don't know, here around 35th and Shields and seeing what's going on? Could be the case. Could be the case. Wouldn't be able to tell you. We will also, at noon, bring you a conversation that Len Casper, Darren Jackson, and AJ Pierzynski had during the broadcast just a couple of days ago. I thought it was one of the finer baseball conversations I've heard in a real long time. The guys got into stuff you don't often hear talked about in depth, so that's coming up at noon. We'll talk White Sox with you when we come back, 312-332-3776. That's the number on White Sox Weekly. It's the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. What's up? The White Sox and Rangers coming up. Game 2 of 3 in this series. Sox won the first one 8-3 last night. They increased their record, or bettered their record, I should say, to 27-29. 2 games under .500. 5 back in the AL Central. The Guardians are 3 back of the Twins. Byron Buxton is playing very well for Minnesota, but the Twins caught some tough injury news yesterday. Their top prospect, Royce Lewis, needs another ACL surgery. I haven't had the chance to talk to Royce Lewis, but Dan Hayes of The Athletic, he covers the Minnesota Twins, and you might remember the Dan Hayes' name. He covered the White Sox for about a decade here in town, locally. He's one hell of a beat reporter and a good dude, too. He was just writing about the injury to Royce, and honestly, it got me thinking a little bit about Jake Berger, the guy we just interviewed here on White Sox Weekly. Jake had those two Achilles tears. The setbacks were there. And throughout, one of the things that Rick Hahn, White Sox general manager, kept saying about Jake, and it's true if you've ever spent time with him or talked to him, he's just, you know, and I think Rick actually said, you know, if I'm not, I might just be paraphrasing, but in an awful way, it couldn't have happened to a better guy. There's nobody with the mental resilience that has the ability to come back from this like Jake. I think Royce Lewis of the Twins might fall under that category. I mentioned Dan Hayes, and I was kind of reading some of his coverage of it. Royce had torn an ACL. It cost him almost all of the last season. He has more damage to that ACL and have to do it again. And the attitude that he's had has just been just failingly upbeat, and I don't understand how a guy has, you know, the livelihood threatened, you know, the ability and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't be able to do it. Jake Berger has. Royce Lewis seems to have it, and hopefully, you know, you hope for the best there for those kind of players. And the reason I kind of got to thinking about injuries at this point is because up and down this game, you know, whether it be to contenders or teams looking to make a push and get back to .500 for the first time in a couple of seasons, or, you know, really establish a foothold with their young prospects, like a couple of teams in this division, in the AL Central, like the Royals and, you know, even the Guardians to a certain degree have had. There have been injuries up and down, and I just, in thinking about it, in thinking about, you know, some of the things we talked with Jake about the time of game and just how long guys are out there, how that does influence injuries. And it's not a situation where guys are whining and aren't tough enough, you know, to be out there the way the players of old were. Listen, these guys are playing 4-hour and 15-minute games, and that's just not a thing that Steve Sachs had to deal with, and it's not a thing that Ozzie Guillen had to deal with. And it's, yes, there were more physical elements of the game of baseball. That is absolutely true, but those collisions were a little bit more one-off, and these, you know, the time on the field kind of wear and tear injuries are quite frankly unavoidable to players. And I guess the long and short of it is, it seems to me that we as a baseball watching, you know, entity and as the sport, we're not done dealing with and kind of still experiencing the cascade effect of the 2020 season, of that injury, of that pandemic shortened season. We're still not done kind of feeling the effects injury wise of the 99-day lockout, the shortened spring training and things like that. And I bring it up just because I think when we talk about injuries in this sport and in others too, I think we tend to be, it's easy to say, this guy can't do this, or this guy can't do that, or look at what he's, and this is, you know, I just think, I hope we can just kind of change the way we talk about it some is all. I hope we can kind of accept that, you know, this happens to guys, and we need to be able to allow players to bounce back and get back into action, get back to their, you know, their next best self. If it is a catastrophic injury the way Tommy John or ACL reconstructions can be, all that kind of stuff. Speaking of injuries, one that seems about to end is Lance Lynn. He's expected, not official, but expected to be able to make the start Tuesday against the Detroit Tigers. It'll be his major league debut here in 2022. I'm actually looking at Lance Lynn right now, former Texas Ranger. He's on the field chatting with some old buddies. Lynn was finished up his AAA rehab work just the other night, and the results weren't pretty, but the workload is what Lance was mostly concerned about. And, you know, a guy that's been in the bigs as long as he has, he knows what he needs to compete at the major league level, and feels ready, it seems, to do that Tuesday against the Tigers. Hopefully that's a big lift for the White Sox. We'll update you on some other injuries, you know, TA and Aloy and all that other kind of stuff, as we get closer to the pregame show start at 12:30. We got to take a break. When we come back, I've been teasing this for a while, and I know it's going to pay off. AJ Pruszynski sat in with Len and DJ during a game just a couple of days ago, and the three of them had an absolutely terrific baseball conversation. We bring that to you on the other side of a break. It's White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We have been teasing this for a while. It is like last year's Pride Night t-shirt, one of our prized possessions here at the network, a real good baseball convo with Len Casper, Darren Jackson, and AJ Pruszynski. You're going to hear a little bit of some odd edits in this one, and it's only because we had to condense the interview down just a little bit, had to take some of the play-by-play out of it. So if you hear the crowd roar and then the crowd goes away or something like that, it's because we had to chop a few things out of it so that you could hear as much of the baseball conversation these three had as we possibly could. So take it away, Len Casper, Darren Jackson, and AJ Pruszynski.
Well, we have done well against the softer throwing left-handers. You probably saw that when we faced Yarbrough down in Tampa.
The White Sox for years have done well against any left-hander, period. So softer, harder, doesn't really matter with the right-hand dominance they have.
How'd you feel about facing left-handers compared to right-handers? Did it make a difference to you?
It only did because we didn't see him. Like, I hit left-handed, so I didn't see, you know, poor Ozzie when he would give me a day off. It was always against the soft-throwing lefty. And I always told Ozzie, that's the guy I want to face. I don't want to face David Price throwing 95. I want to face guy throwing 85.
Can the left-left thing be a self-fulfilling prophecy for some guys in that they just, they don't see a lot of lefties, so, you know, you're 2-for-19, and the guy's, he can't hit lefties.
Well, it starts early, because in the minor leagues, you play against everybody. So you play lefty, righty, doesn't matter, and then you get to the big leagues, and they tell you you can't hit them. And you say, well, I hit them my whole career, my whole life, since high school, little league, whatever you want to call it. And you get here, and you face, I don't know, Randy Johnson, you go 0-for-3, and they're like, yeah, told you can't hit lefties. And then the other thing is, you have to understand, when you get to the major leagues as a left-handed hitter, the lefties you don't get to face are usually the best ones. So those guys are the ones that have the good numbers against lefties because they don't face them either. So when you do see a lefty, I remember we faced Andrew Miller here when he was with the Tigers. And at the time, lefties were like 0-for-40 off him on the year, and he was starting. And Ozzy had me and Erstad in the lineup. And we're like, Ozzy, lefty. He's like, just. And we both ended up with like two hits apiece.
Right.
Randomly. Like, it just happened that way. And Ozzy's like, see, I knew what I was doing. And we're like, well, we just got lucky. But, you know, it just, it is what it is. But yes, lefties were definitely different because for me as a left-hand hitter, I had to change and I had to learn how to hit a left-handed pitcher.
The other theory from some managers, and I know, DJ, you do agree with this, is, if you only stack righties, sometimes it allows that left-hand pitcher just to kind of get in a groove with the changeup, right? I mean, sometimes...
Well, he never has to worry about anything coming to that other side of the plate and making an adjustment with his delivery. It's always going to be the same.
Yep.
Mark Burley used to talk about that all the time.
Inside 2-0.
He loved it when it was all right-handed hitters. He would be like, yes, there's no lefties.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to worry about throwing sinkers into lefties. I don't have to worry about sweeping sliders or breaking balls away. He's like, I can just focus on one side of the plate and pitch my game, cutters in, changeups away, and never have to worry about it. So, yeah, that's a thing.
Okay, question. Have you thought about instructing, managing, doing anything at any level of coaching?
Listen, I have interest in that at some point if it's the right situation and it's the right place and time. But if someone calls you and says, we want you to manage our team, there's 30 of those guys in the world.
Right.
It's hard to say no to that opportunity because as a former player, you always second-guess the manager on the bench anyway, so you feel like you're already managing the team half the time.
What are the one or two tenets of the best qualities of the managers you played for that you would really try to adhere to?
The two things that I've learned now, more so not playing, being retired and doing the media. I'm very fortunate I still get to meet with the managers and talk to the managers and talk to players. Well, the two things that I've learned now since I've been able to be around a lot of managers and players since I've quit playing is, one, communication is number one. You have to be able to communicate with every guy on your roster and let them know where they stand, whether it's good, bad, indifferent, whatever it is. You tell them, hey, this is what I want you to do. This is where your role is. And let them know, and they'll accept it because players are they want to know the truth, right? Right,
yep.
DJ?
Absolutely.
And then second of all, you put players in a position to succeed as much as you can. Those are the two things that good managers do. You put them in positions to succeed, and you allow them to succeed. Now, you're not always going to do that, Lynn, but if you've communicated with them well enough, you might be able to lie to them a little bit and tell them, and they'll believe you,
yeah.
Even though it's not the best place. But they'll still ride with you.
That's good stuff.
It's a topic that Lynn and I were just talking about yesterday. I mentioned the same topic about managing and how you handle a bullpen. And so it's interesting. Everything you just kind of said is something he and I were just talking about as soon as yesterday. In the end, it comes down to if it's something, you know, somebody like yourself and a catcher, and we see how many catchers turn into managers, because you have a different view of the game and you control pitching.
The other one I talked to managers about is you do learn negatively, too. It's not a bad thing at all. 0-1 is grounded foul. It's 0-2, and that is your experiences as a player or sometimes as a minor league manager or a coach. You say, I don't know if I like that. That's one thing I'm not going to do. Now, I'm not asking you to name any names, but if you guys, is there one thing that you would see as a player where you thought, I don't know if I like that?
Well, I played for a guy, I'll use his name, Felipe Alou.
Okay.
In San Francisco. He would sit in his office, never come out, never be around the players. And Moises at the time was playing. He would sit in his office and watch Moises play. And we'd have a game, and you'd never see him until the game started.
Wow.
Because he was in there.
Yeah.
Those are things you got to be.
And then the other part, you mentioned the manager being in his office. It's got to be a little tricky, right? Because the player's domain is the clubhouse. You want to know the manager is present. But not, I guess, leering over your shoulder all the time, right?
There's well, you stay out of the club. I think DJ would agree. You stay out of the clubhouse
right.
as much as you can. But during batting practice, you can talk to guys. You can walk around. During plane flights, you can talk to guys. When they get on the plane or during the plane flights. There's a lot of time spent, a lot of downtime.
You know what, AJ? I think you could do it, but the media stuff.
Oh, that's...
You'd be great at it, but you'd probably say some stuff that your players would not like, and that might be okay with you, too.
Well,
who did I play for in Chicago?
Yeah.
It wasn't Robin Ventura, I know that.
After this pitch, I want to...
Vaughn takes a strike.
Cut in. But the thing about AJ would say something maybe the players didn't appreciate, but they would know that's AJ. If AJ said it, he'd already had conversations with his players and probably told them to be accountable.
Yep.
And therefore, he would say the truth.
I just thought that conversation between the three guys, Len and DJ and AJ, was such a good one. There was a lot more, too, because AJ stuck around for most of the half of the inning, most of the next half of the inning, I should say. I'll retell, I guess, a little bit of what AJ was talking about there. I think so often in this game, because, and for a good reason, right? Baseball is such an accessible game. Adam Abdallah was talking about this on our flagship station the other night. Baseball is so accessible to fans because
each decision, each lineup call, each pitch, each swing is so thoroughly measured against the swings and pitches and decisions like it that have been executed in the past. We get such a rich database of history in this game that we can kind of measure what this next guy is going to do based on what guys like him before have done. That's great. And it gives us so much information about this game. And it, quite frankly, Tony La Russa was talking about exactly this and how much he welcomes this in the game and how great the game is because of it. When he had his decision to walk Trey Turner in a 1-2 count that was roundly talked about and analyzed and you know, guessed and then second guessed and third guessed and all that kind of stuff. Tony embraces this part of the game because it is such a connection point, I think, for fans because it is so quickly accessible. But the other part of the game, rest assured, is this interpersonal dynamic that AJ and Len and DJ were talking about. And how much it matters is absolutely a worthy topic of conversation, right? Like, if you roll out 26 now with the lineups, if you roll out 26, you know, fantastic ballplayers, if you've got 26 Mike Trouts, but they're all jerks, does it matter? It might not. They might all be great enough at their individual jobs. I don't know how great a pitcher Mike is, but I think somebody did this in MLB The Show with 26 Mike Trouts, and they turned out to be a 500 team with Mike Trout pitching. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you could have a literal all-star team where everyone on that team hates one another, and you might be able to still win a lot of ball games. But that doesn't exist. Yeah, maybe save for the Dodgers. And even still, you have to have a balance of this, of the hierarchy, of veteran to rookie, of even guys who are vying to take the job away from the starting second baseman or whatever. And all of that matters. I am, as Connor here, just you and me talking, I am as big a baseball nerd as it gets on the broadcast side of things, I think. And certainly there are others who are, I'm not saying I'm as smart as a guy like Jason Benetti or anything like that. But, you know, I trust the numbers and I use them as an access point to this game. Still, I think one of the things I've learned most or been surprised about most or needed to learn about most in my, you know, 4 or 5 years here broadcasting for the White Sox is that extra stuff, the little things that matter on road trips, the connections to players as human beings, the ability for teammates to pick other guys up when they're down, to push other guys when they need to be pushed. The one thing that jumps to mind most readily, I think, is a situation where, you know, I think it was Lucas Giolito talking a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, something like that, about a teammate of his. Guy down on the depth chart, guy who didn't, you know, matter a whole lot on the ball club, and saying, well, this guy's my hype guy. Like, well, Lucas, you just threw a no-hitter. You need a hype guy? I was like, yeah. You know, everybody does at some point. Everybody does. And I think regardless of, you know, how much we can break down individual returns, win probability added, and, you know, all these little mathematical things that do matter in this game, don't get me wrong, applying those next to the individuals about whom these decisions are made and the teammates around them, the coaching staff around them, the lessons they get learned there, all that kind of stuff, just about on-field baseball, I think it's invaluable to think about as the connection, as the building of a ball club. And I just thought, you know, the conversation there between Len and DJ and AJ regarding that in particular was such a cool window into those workings of the game. AJ having been, you know, a guy in a clubhouse that other teams hated. And then when he got to your team, you know, whether that be the White Sox or the Giants or the Rangers afterward, like, they loved him. They hated playing against him, but they loved him as a teammate. DJ, who was such a valuable teammate to a lot of guys that he played with, and as he'll tell you, had a lot of teammates that taught him a whole lot of valuable lessons. DJ will always talk about the veterans that he came up learning this game from and how incredibly informative that was to his own development as a player. And then you have Len, you know, who's been around World Series winners. You've seen Len has broadcast through careers of managers like Joe Maddon, who have been on the cutting edge of how to manage a ball club. He broadcast with Bob Brenly, who is very much, as I understand it, a pretty old school dude when it comes to managing a ball club, but still very connected with his players, you know, that kind of thing. I just, the perspectives that we were able to put together in the booth here during a White Sox game just the other day were really cool. And I, in case you missed that particular game, I just wanted to bring the conversation to you because we're real proud of how we're able to talk about this game and the perspectives we're able to bring you here on the network. You can spend the summer at the ballpark with Miller Lite, Bleachers, and Brews. Get $1 ticket and $2 beers starting at $27. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID to purchase tickets. Visit whitesox.com/brew. We're going to step aside for a quick break, come back, preview today's ball game a little bit, pregame show at 12:30, but there are a couple of particulars that I wanted to get to you. And if you want to give a phone call, talk a little White Sox too, we got some time left for you. 312-332-3776. That's the number. It's White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Bleck and Abdallah, weeknights at 6 on ESPN 1000.
Closing it up here on White Sox Weekly, I'm Connor McKnight. We had one heck of a show for you this morning. I had a little bit to do with it, not a whole lot. Eric Ostrowski is our executive producer, and his work brought you Jim Callis earlier in the day. He is one of MLB's prospect experts. We talked White Sox prospects with him. We talked to Jake Berger and found out that the one thing that he's never tried before but is overconfident he would be good at is a chess tournament. We talk baseball and stuff too, but apparently Jake wants to get in on chess tournaments, so we're going to try and book him into a chess tournament here in the next couple of weeks, find him an off day, and then book him into a chess tourney. He's going to love that. We also heard a conversation from A.J. Pierzynski, Len Casper, and Darren Jackson during a broadcast just the other day that I thought was absolutely excellent. Hope you enjoyed it as well. White Sox and Rangers are coming up in a little bit here. Pre-game show starts in 8 minutes here on the network. And there's just a couple of things, loose ends, I wanted to tie up before we're done here this afternoon. I mentioned the pitching matchup today, Lucas Giolito and Martin Perez, and we'll touch on this some in the pregame show as well, but I was, you know, kind of scrolling through a couple of things. Like everybody else, I'm interested in some of the top players that might get moved at the deadline, which is in August 1st this year is the trade deadline. And I thought, you know, this Martin Perez guy, he's been really good for the Rangers so far this year. He is a trade candidate, that's for sure. And I was going through an article and noticed Martin Perez's changeup has the third highest chase rate of an individual pitch with at least 150 out of the zone that were thrown. So what we're talking about here and what MLB.com has written about is just how nasty a pitch is when thrown out of the strike zone and how many chases it's getting. Martin Perez is getting chases at a 47.4% clip, his changeup. The only better pitches that have been thrown 150 times that are getting that kind of chase rate, Jeffrey Springs' changeup and Kevin Gausman's splitter. That's nasty stuff. So for the White Sox today, you got to watch out for that change. Martin Perez is going to try and probably be successful in getting you swinging outside the strike zone on it. Key is whether you're eliminating that pitch, if possible, and trying to look for something else from Perez and do damage on that, or making sure that that changeup is up if you're going to swing at a pitch like that against the lefty Martin Perez. Now, the good news is, at 4-2 and a 1.56, while he is a tough matchup, he is a left-hander. And that usually benefits the White Sox in a lot of different situations. They are much better against lefties than they are against righties. In fact, five of their runs last night, that whole five-run rally, came against left-hander John King out of the bullpen for the Rangers last night, kind of proof positive. Not that White Sox fans are unaware, but kind of proof positive that hitting lefties is just a touch easier for the White Sox than it has been to hit righties here. One more thing that I wanted to do, too, as we talked with Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline, Jorge Vera, one of the more hyped, international signees of the White Sox over the last little bit, the fifth-ranked prospect in the system, made his stateside debut, his single-A debut just the other day, through 2 2/3, saw that he was sitting around 94-95, touched 98 or so. And that's been an interesting thing for Vera as he's come stateside and signed with the White Sox. Where he sits velocity-wise and where he has kind of flashed and touched in that velocity range, I guess he's been up to 100 during some of his showcases and some of his debuts. So great to see Jorge Vera work a little bit this year. I misspoke. It's not his stateside debut. He was laid up with, I believe, an oblique strain to start the season. So this was just his 22 debut. And Vera, the fifth-ranked prospect in the system right now per MLB Pipeline. Yoelki Cespedes is 4. Jose Rodriguez is 3. Oscar Colas is 2, and Colson Montgomery is 1. Montgomery had himself a three-hit night the other night. Good for Colson Montgomery, and great to see he has been playing really well at A-ball. White Sox and Rangers are coming up in just a little bit, and if you are looking for a unique way to start your game day, treat your group to a pregame patio party, you'll get 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat buffet along with unlimited beer, wine, and Coca-Cola products. For more information, visit whitesox.com/patio or call 312-674-1000. That's going to do it for us. The pregame show is coming up in just a couple. Big thanks to Charlie and Jake and Eric and Jake Berger and Jim Callis. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.